Yeah.
Welcome to episode 4 of the Cannabis Maker Podcast. We're joined here with David, Sam, Corey, Lobo, Forzana, Jamie, Manny, and Wes. And we're here today to, you know, David gave a bit of suggestion on some topics and what really is a focus point at the moment in the industry. It's always a topic of discussion is the destigmatization, but more on the educational approach and what kind of things we can really be looking out for to give people the right tips, steer them in the right direction, and show them what this plant really is all about. Before we get started on today's session of the Cannabis Maker Podcast, we're going to take a quick second to give a shout out to our sponsors. Today's episode is self-sponsored by Nordic Herbzone. Nordic Herbzone is Norway's first cannabis and hemp brand and works with the best medical cannabis doctors, pharmacists, and patients to provide more information and access to medical cannabis patients in Norway and Europe. If you're interested in a medical cannabis prescription and want to find out more, head to NordicHerbzone.com. 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 I think it would be cool to start with Jamie this evening. Say, Jamie, how's it going, man?
It's Jamie here. I'm in Nova Scotia, Canada. I own a medical clinic. We help facilitate patients acquiring medical authorization for cannabis usage. We also help them register with licensed producers, or if they choose to cultivate their own product at home, we help facilitate that as well. I'm just happy to be here. Thanks.
Hey, Jamie, thanks for coming in. I appreciate that, sharing that as well. I know you're with Medi Kush, and we'll just take a little introduction as well from Manny, because I know you guys have got some big stuff going on. Manny, how's it going, sir?
Great to be on. It's Manny from Ontario, Canada. I'm the founder of Forest Farms. We're a breeder, grower, about to be licensed facility in Ontario, and bringing lots of exciting stuff to the legal market, and happy to be here.
Hey, thanks, guys, for coming on. I appreciate you guys joining us as well from all the way over there. We're in Europe at the moment. We're down on the south coast of Spain, and we've got David and Sam who are David, Sam, and Forzana who are over in the UK at the moment. And yeah, David, how's it going as well?
Everybody, yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Enjoying had a lovely blue sky day in the UK. So, as always, thank you for having me up here. Looking forward to dropping some topics and answering some questions and seeing where we can get to. Thank you.
Absolutely. That's I know David suggested as well a little bit on the destigmatization education side. And we were speaking earlier a little bit about how early education can start with cannabis. I know we've had it before in topics that there are, you know, it's still lacking in the medical education. You know, doctors aren't exactly during their medical studies or degrees, or even when they're going into specific fields, not exactly learning a lot about the endocannabinoid system and how to apply cannabis, you know, therapeutically. So I feel like this is something that, you know, it always raises a topic of concern. But one thing that we also have, I feel, on the recreational side is also, you know, that we have to educate people, that we have to be telling them with their cannabis, when it's being packaged, what the terpene level is, what the cannabinoid content is, if it's been tested, where it's been tested, how it's been tested, how it's been grown, the soil it's been grown in, you know, all these kind of things that we really should be coming out on the transparency side. And I really love to just steer it as well to Jamie and Manny here who are, you know, in that business of touching the plant. How are you guys really educating and communicating with your guys as consumers?
We're in constant communication with our consumers and with growers, and like you said, Liam, one of the biggest points that I could emphasize to you guys over the pond that are, you know, maybe a bit behind or, you know, getting organized now, but is to integrate as much testing as you possibly can for growers and for patients. And there's machines and technology out there to help ensure that science is guiding your decisions on what you're doing. And that would be one of the biggest pieces of advice that I could give you right now.
That's great advice, because that's how I came across Jamie and Manny. So my name's Bizarro and I'm a UK patient. And I was considering testing because I wanted to be able to know what my medicine contained and if it did what it said on the tin. And so they introduced me and educated me on the Gemacert. So thank you for that, because that was really helpful. And I've been able to relay that to other patients and other companies.
Yeah, absolutely. And my company here in Canada is offering the service for completely free of charge as just a way of educating people what they're consuming. So we do it by mail, and we have 7 Gemacert machines across Canada, and you're able to mail your sample to sort of the nearest owner of one of my machines and have it tested for free as a basic introduction to testing and, third-party compliance. I still do recommend, having a lab tested as well, especially if you're a licensed producer, you basically have to. But this is just an excellent tool for somebody that, doesn't have access to, the big laboratories that we see, especially here in Canada.
Thank you, Jamie. That's really interesting. I actually looked at some of these machines previously and very, very interesting. How do you think that they are going to sort of develop in the future to allow, or do you think that they will ever get to the point where they will be made on a smaller scale? I mean, in size, and do you think that they'll be made available from a price point to more people at home, or do you think that the market will always be, you need to send your samples off,
No, I definitely think, this machine right now is the size of a volleyball, and it is portable. You need a Wi-Fi connection and you need a cell phone or some type of tablet in order to make it work. And it's got a back end too to the software. So all of the testing that I've done, I can log in to my user interface and then, analyze each sample that I've taken. And, I can chart it, I can graph it, I can add notes to that sample. So going forward, I have a much better decision process based on the analytics of what I'm seeing out of this machine that is using near infrared spectrometer that is, basically looking at the analysis from wavelength perspective. It's pretty advanced science, and I welcome anybody to check them out of Israel. Gemisert or Gemisert, the name would be in my profile, or Manny and Wes here as well. He's got a background in them. So it's a company that's doing really well here right now in Canada. And I suspect, it's just a matter of time before the rest of the world starts seeing it.
No, that's absolutely a fair point. Just for the listeners and the audience as well, and the guys here on stage, we've seen the Gemisert make some waves across Europe as well. I know for a fact that in Amsterdam now, there's quite a few coffee shop owners who have been, they've kind of been forced to get one because of the amount of scamming and the amount of shortcoming that's been going on since the whole supply chain has been disrupted with borders closing down during Corona. So we've seen actual coffee shop owners who, they usually just smell the bag and they say, oh, it looks good, it smells good, let's sell that. And it turns out that a lot of the time they were maybe selling some really nice looking strong CBD, but they would be selling that as an indica or a white widow on the menu, And now with the Gemisert and testing, people have really been able to differentiate that. And Jamie, Manny, Wes, I think it's really cool that you guys are working with this as well, because from what I understand, every time you test something, every time somebody tests something, it's run against a database, against the analyses that they've collected over time that they have in Israel. So every time somebody tests with it, the software and everything is getting smarter. And I know that they've got plans now. They've been adding updates, to what was it, to test the moisture content. And I think soon maybe also test for more cannabinoids, maybe starting with CBG. So I think testing is definitely something that needs to come around more in Europe because, people still have no idea what they're smoking.
I just wanted to say, you guys were talking about, stigmatization in the industry and how do we get the consumer and the populace educated on this. I think one of the most important things is to be able to use our social media platforms in order to move the needle forward on cannabis. And one of the things we have to stay away from is the imagery of bongs and joints and all of that stuff. It just doesn't do any good. A lot of people associate that type of imagery with intravenous drug use and with other types of drugs. So I do believe that, we have to do positive reinforcement and positive imagery in order to get rid of a lot of the stigma that is out there currently.
Yeah, I agree completely. This is sort of my wheelhouse, if you like, branding. There's an agency just started up called Endo Agency that I'm working with at the moment, who, from a design point of view, are sort of taking a lot of CBD and any sort of cannabis-based brands and redesigning everything for them, packaging, brand, logo, everything from the ground up in a way that makes them look contemporary and professional, and getting away from all of the kind of spliffy kind of imagery that you know, is, if anything, sort of deprofessionalizes this industry. I think that's a really important point for anyone sort of getting into this business at the moment, is to kind of make sure that their branding looks completely professional and completely away from anything that might be sort of considered drug culture.
I have to sort of, I can agree and I can disagree to that, because for us, that's what someone said 4 years ago when people were entering the CBD space, to not, people were saying, don't even use the leaf. But how can we destigmatize something if we hide it away? That's my question. You know, it's, the visualization is quite important, certainly to children. And this is a question I was going to raise later on, about how, you know, you have children yourself, Sam. How do you make children aware of this so that they don't feel afraid to talk about it, to raise the question in schools? Because let's be honest, kids are now seeing their parents consume this stuff. So they're not seeing the leaf there. Completely understand that. But how do we solve that? And how do we destigmatize something if we're being told to hide the leaf?
So I think there's a fine line. I think there's a fine line between a nod to the leaf and having something that is just a leaf. There was a brand that I spoke to a year and a half, 2 years ago now, called 420 Drink. That was the name of their CBD drink. And it was like a bright pink can with bright green cannabis leaves all over the can. And from a branding point of view, I felt that looked quite immature. And some of the CBD brands that I see now look quite mature as brands, but still feature the seven-pointed leaf, you know, that nods towards that, but that isn't, from a design perspective, immature. I think that's the fine line.
1 second. I don't think we need to get rid of the imagery of leaf or the imagery of buds. I think that's quite important to the cannabis space. I just think that we need to be able to explain to children and to people that are not involved with cannabis exactly what cannabis is and what it does for you on a medical level. Certainly the recreational level brings up about a lot of questions. How can something be medical and be recreational? That's the hard part that you're going to have explaining to people.
I just wanted to add a little bit on this conversation. I will just say, first of all, my name is Jolene Rivera. I'm the founder of Kitchen Toke Media. One of the reasons that I founded Kitchen Toke was because I was looking for credibility in the industry, and especially credibility where culinary cannabis is concerned. And when I was looking, and this was in 2010, 2011, I couldn't relate to the imagery that I was seeing for me, for myself, or even for my family and the people I was talking to about culinary cannabis. I couldn't relate to the cover of Hive Times or Dope or Cannabis Now. You know, those were not speaking to me per se. There's nothing wrong with them. There's a market for them. So that brings me to the relevancy. I think there's a time and a place to show the leaf, and I think we can do it in a sophisticated way. Sophistication is not a word that's ever, or that was associated with the cannabis culture, if you will, you know, at the very beginning. And I think it's changed. I think it's grown, but I also get challenged on it. You know, do I think it's important to maintain the culture? And my only answer to that is that I can only be authentic and honest to me, myself, my brand, and the message I'm trying to communicate. So I created a platform that speaks to cannabis education, everything about cannabis, and cooking and eating the plant. And I'm trying to market this to an audience of people who maybe felt like I did, to my aunts, my uncles, my family who were not cannabis users, or to my friends and their parents. So I think, you know, where it depends who your message is to, it depends, you know, what's relevant for you and your brand and your message. And then also exactly what kind of message are you trying to communicate? So I think, you know, when you talk about marketing and changing the culture and the image, I guess, you know, it always comes back to that, you know, is it relevant for you and your message? And then when you talk about kids, that is education that comes from their parents and the people around them, their teachers and their, you know, the people they look up to. So I think, you know, none of us are marketing to kids. So it's really an obstacle that we just have to maintain through education.
Hi, everyone. My name is Alan Robinson. I just wanted to kind of jump into the conversation on two different levels. Number one, I don't believe that it is our responsibility to destigmatize cannabis or cannabis use, because I believe that cannabis and cannabis use are so incredibly prevalent and that the people are rejecting the drug propaganda of the Just Say No campaigns and the propaganda of the past. Users, people that use cannabis, know the truth about it. So as a marketer, as a business person, and as an advocate, I focus on the fact that responsible adult use as opposed to recreational use is the aim. Recreational use sounds like folks are just out, you know, partying and having a good time. Adult responsible use in its title specifically states this isn't for children and it requires responsible consumption. That's one, and that's just the way that I approach it. It's been very well for my brand, Herbal Aspect. I feel like, you know, we've been largely very successful with not trying to push that boulder up that hill. There's so many people that use cannabis. We have such a large consumer base that we don't need to destigmatize it. We need our legislators and our lawmakers to get out of the way of our researchers and our scientists and our medical professionals so that they can innovate and they can make discoveries in the space. That's on their end. From another perspective, though, the testing situation and the testing is what really brought me into this conversation. We sell a lot of Delta 8 THC. And just recently here, law enforcement has been raiding some of the local businesses in our state, saying that they were selling illegal products. So I'm really interested in any sort of testing equipment, because I know that Delta 8 can isomerize back into Delta 9 if it's stored incorrectly, and the oxidation happens. And what we're trying to do is avoid that, but we'd also like to educate other retailers and consumers about these pitfalls. Because I live in a jurisdiction where Delta 9 THC is illegal, and that makes this legal product potentially illegal after having sat on a shelf for a month. So if anybody has any insight as to testing equipment, testing facilities, testing companies, I'd love to hear about it. I'm going to go ahead and be quiet now.
I'd like to speak to your destigmatization comment, just because I think you're actually proving my point for me, which I appreciate, Alan. I was interviewed by High Times, and they asked me, you know, am I a stoner? I've been asked by the Chicago Tribune, do I consider myself a stoner? So I think, I mean, to me, that's kind of what we're talking about here. And my answer to them is, sure, if that's what you want to call me. I mean, if this is what the stoner looks like, I guess. I mean, my point is that I don't have an answer to that, except I'm only going to be me. And if that's how they want to label us, I think we destigmatize just by being us. I'm not saying you have to try. I'm saying that you be you, you do your brand, you run your brand program well, and you do it in a way that's relevant for you in this industry, and you're communicating a thoughtful message. I think you destigmatize just by doing that alone. And so I just wanted to reemphasize that point. As far as the Delta stuff, I'll let you guys handle. But thank you for letting me speak. I'm Jolene Rivera, and I'm finished speaking.
Thank you. Jolene, if I may, just a quick response. If personally, if asked if I am a stoner, I would tell them, A, I'm offended, and B, no, I am not. I am an adult consumer of cannabis. I am a marketer. I am a business person. I am a black man fighting for equality.
But that's my point, Alan. I think that's they're gonna label everybody who uses cannabis on the daily basis as a stoner. So my point is yeah, take a good look at it, because it's everything that you don't, you're not what you project it to be. I'm everything that it, what your projection isn't. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I 100% agree with the both of you. It's too bad that a couple of people had to leave the conversation that started this point here, because that's extremely controversial, and I could not disagree more with Manny on the fact to getting rid of the imagery of bongs. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. That is 100% perpetuating the stigmatism. The first thing that came to me, Alan, for sure, is that Anslinger mentality, man. You sent me down the rabbit hole, really doing a lot of research within that human being and understanding just the impact that has happened. And I've been trying to tell everybody about that, you know, Harry Anslinger and the Gore Files, and, you know, just this ridiculous imagery that's perpetuated even to this day is pretty clear. So when people in our industry say that we should be getting rid of this imagery, it doesn't make sense to me at all. And I think I respect people's opinions for sure. That's, you know, how we have a healthy and constructive debate. But I think, Jolene, you put it absolutely on the head. I couldn't find a better way to say that, is just being yourself. You know, people, if people want to think that I'm a stoner in that way, that's completely fine. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm running a couple of my own companies and waking up in the morning and doing absolutely everything that I love that's near and dear to me. And so if that's what a stoner is to them, then I think that's okay to me, to be honest. You know, we're really fighting and doing a good thing and feeling good about what we do. And I think the good thing is to be responsible about it. And that, again, you know, that's the whole reason why I have my brand, and why, again, you have to resonate with it. You know, it's kind of like ignoring the fact that when you drink alcohol, that there's shots involved in the situation. And come on now, like, let's not be silly, everybody, right? So I think it's important to be, you know, level-headed about it. You know, don't be crazy with it. But bongs are an important method of consumption in the medical community as well. And I think we'd be fooling ourselves, you know, if these different methods of consumption should be treated differently. So, that's what I wanted to add to that.
I just want to jump in and say that I think that vocabulary is important. I think that words, for that matter, are important, right? So if the vocabulary to describe a cannabis consumer is a stoner, then I would counter with, is the vocabulary to describe a Wall Street financier a bank robber? Do we call them crooks? No, we call them Wall Street financiers. I'm a business owner. I'm a responsible adult cannabis user. I am a professional. And so I'm not a drug dealer, but I certainly sell cannabis. And because I use cannabis, that doesn't make me a stoner. And if anybody were to disrespect me in that way, then I would have to gently correct them.
So you're saying
their vocabulary is wrong.
So you're saying that words do matter, Alan, because that's kind of what
words matter.
Absolutely. And so I think where we're in a very different position here in the UK. We are years behind you in the States and in Canada. And so the words that we use at the moment, I think the pendulum has to swing towards the safest possible way to normalize the plant and the use of the plant as a medicine, and get away from some of the stoner language to help normalize it. And then things like bongs and like the sort of the drug culture terminology will come back in naturally, because it will always be part of it. But to help normalize it at a stage that we're at the moment, where, you know, essentially it's still very illegal all over this country. It's very difficult to get hold of a medical prescription for cannabis still in this country. There's very, very few people that have access to it. And that actually education amongst the normal average person in the street is very, very low. Most people that I would speak to outside of these sorts of groups have no understanding of the medical benefits of cannabis. And the only way that those people will be convinced is by being introduced to it in a way that is non-threatening. And so that's sort of where I come from in terms of the changing the language. I use words like medical cannabis consumer rather than cannabis user, for example.
I mean, I just wish everybody in the alcohol business talked the same way as you did then. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. It really doesn't. Like, there's still, you should still be acknowledging that people consume with a bong. Like, I don't see why that would be a sticking point. Again, like, I am matching that up to, you know, stigmatization with taking shots or something, if that's kind of the same thing.
And that stigmatization isn't cooking, Corey.
Yeah, so like, and I didn't want to make that stigmatization. Maybe people are taking a shot because that's like how they handle it. They don't want to have like a bigger amount, right? So I think that it's still, again, it's not good to steer away from what's currently happening in that culture. I think it's really best to take it on and start talking about it early, because the longer you take to get on to some of these things, it's going to take longer for you guys to actually unravel a mess. And so I think it's important that, like, smoking from a bong or having maybe a cleanlier or a cleanlier type of consumption, because I know that's the way it's viewed in some other markets, I think that can also be transposed across the pond and in some of these markets where, you know, that's kind of a foreign idea. Because, I do know that those methods of vaporization, methods of using a bong is considered a little bit cleaner for some folks instead of, you know, I mean, let's be honest, putting tobacco with your flower over in the UK is definitely not healthy. So, you know, there's definitely things that need to be addressed within there. And if you talk about the clean ways of consuming cannabis, that's the way you're going to win, Sam. I would love to team up with you, brother. I'm really glad that I have somebody on the other side of that and that's saying these things, because it really presents an opportunity for us to work together and smash this out of the park, because I'm excited that somebody's got that other side of it. I appreciate you sharing that today, Sam. I really do, brother.
And Corey, I think just like what you said about the way you use it, it's the same thing as saying you use a rocks glass or a shot glass, or you use a bong or a pipe or papers, or you use a whisk and a bowl and an infuser machine or a sous vide stick, whatever it is. These are just tools for you to use this plant, to me. And I don't think that we should be, by being us, I think we destigmatize it by showing it in a responsible way. And I think, I'll take it even further. And I think we've done that. We are creating culinary cannabis content for Food and Wine magazine and their platform. So I think the message that we're making some waves and we're actually getting mainstream and people who've never really considered this to look at us in a different way. So I think we are making, progress. So, but these are all just tools, and I don't believe that we should, negate a tool just because some people don't find it attractive.
I was just going to take a real quick moment. Guys, thank you so much. Jolene, if we can take a real quick 20-30 second breakdown, and then we'll have Alan as well and Jason. I'd love to get that, just on what you guys are doing in the industry for our listeners and where they can find you and get in touch with you.
My name is Jolene Rivera. I'm the founder of Kitchen Toke Media. Kitchen Toke is the first and currently the only media platform in the world educating the consumer or informing the consumer on culinary cannabis for health and wellness. We produce media for our website, videos, recipes, stories. We report the facts as we know them, and we know those facts change as the research comes in, but all of our stories are fact-based, source-based material, and we also put them in print in a quarterly magazine that's distributed to 2,500 stores around the United States. We're in Canada, and we're in 6 other countries. So kitchentoke.com is our website, and you can find us there. Thank you so much. And then most recently, I just launched a honey brand, and you can read about it on my bio. But today, I'm specifically talking about Kitchen Toke and the educational platform. So thank you so much for letting me be here.
Jolene, thank you so much for sharing that as well. And I think it's awesome to see that you guys are making waves. I think we have yet a couple of months, maybe about a year, to see something like that really come over to Europe and have it. So when you guys are ready at that point, you definitely hit us up. I'm looking forward to see that. Alan, give me a little bit of a breakdown, and for our listeners as well later on Spotify and iTunes, on Google, wherever they're listening, What are you doing, sir, and what are you doing in this industry?
Well, I am the co-founder and primary owner of Herbal Aspect. You can find us over on herbalaspect.com. We are a CBD health and wellness apothecary. Our primary product is Delta 8 THC. We have gummies, vapes, all sorts of edibles available. So there's that. I'm also the executive director and chairman of the board for Wisconsin Normal. That's the state chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. In 2020, Normal named me the most outstanding cannabis advocate in the nation, which led to me being the most hated on cannabis advocate in the nation.
Well, Alan, I appreciate you being here, man, and thank you so much for joining us. I got to say as well, big shout out to Normal and what they've got going on. We got a couple of connections with them up in Norway as well, and they are pushing it and making waves. And I think that's a perfect time on cannabis reform as well to welcome in Mr. Jason Beck. He's the founder and vice president of the Global Alliance for Cannabis Commerce. What's going on, man? How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Leo. Happy Easter to everybody. Hope everyone's enjoying their Sunday.
Happy Easter. Thanks for coming on, man. I really, really appreciate that. For everybody here, for our guys in the audience and for our listeners later on, you want to give us a quick breakdown on what you're doing in the industry and what you're seeing at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm the longest continuous retail operator of cannabis in the United States. I've owned and operated dispensaries since 2001 and have played an integral role in a lot of the policies that incubated the cannabis industry at its infancy state, as well as on a state and local level, and mainly primarily work on the federal space. I'm the owner of a fully vertical integrated company with assets in multiple states. And so just here to lend any advice that I can help out with.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, Jason. Thanks so much. I think it's a really good time as well for everybody in the room. We've really had some interesting topics on destigmatization, really what we're kind of seeing at the moment. And I got to be honest with you guys, like Sam said as well, like Alan mentioned, like Forzana was saying, like Jolene also said, you know, Corey made the same point. In Europe, we're still very much, I feel like some people are confused. Some people don't really know what way to turn. David has made the point multiple times that, you know, we're just being overflooded with brands, and now they're really having to make the differentiation, like Sam said, between how are they going to approach it in terms of how they look, how they're doing their branding, how are they approaching the consumer, how are they educating. So I just kind of wanted to ask you guys over there across the pond in Canada and the US, how can you really see in Europe, you know, with this stigmatization, in what areas can we really start to approach this on the education side? Because we had this with, you know, how we can't really talk about the leaf or bongs, how this has to be a part of it. And all of this, you know, maybe not coining it cannabis use, but maybe cannabis consumer. What kind of points do you guys really see as strategic strong points in this fight?
If, just to put this out there, if maybe the removal of the cannabis leaf and some of the culture was a way for the medicinal and market to be able to function and move from drug to medicine, as in illicit drug to medicine, rather than it be something that necessarily needs to be reflected in the lifestyle industry or the adult use industry. Because I know when it comes down to medicine, there is no sign of anything sort of cannabis related. But I don't think that has that much of an impact either, really. But I think in the lifestyle, that would be huge, because it'd be kind of having a huge impact on the culture.
Yeah, I think that was, we usually use like a green cross, or there was still some sort of form of a leaf here in Canada when we were really pushing through on that gray market side, where we had dispensaries that were allowed to operate here in the country to allow access for adults here. So that was kind of one of the, you know, bastions that a lot of customers would see, is that they would kind of look for that green cross or the some sort of like in leaf format, not overtly being a cannabis leaf, but there was still that, you know, it was still clear that you were going into a place where you were welcome to find, you know, cannabis products that were likely to be safe. So I do agree, it was a good way to, you know, have certain clients, like, you know, maybe like the main, like a mainstream type of client, like the PTA mom, for example, or, you know, people that you might not necessarily see in these shops, they were able to locate us due to having some of those things there. So I definitely have seen that being effective in the transition of the Canadian market to for sure.
Great contribution, Corey. It's Fazana speaking, by the way. Yeah, I agree. I think it's fantastic. And I think our UK and European market actually sort of mirror each other. So what happens over there will essentially happen over here and vice versa. So, I mean, I think when it comes down to the removing the stigma, a lot of it comes down to just cannabis sells itself. That's what I always say. And I think as a medicine, so I can only really, that's my expertise. I would say, you know, we're moving in the right direction. It's moved from drug to medicine. And now I think once we get medicine done correctly, and we are there in Europe, we have got some way to go, but we, you know, we're making good progress. I think we'll be able to move from medicine to lifestyle. And I think then a lot of things will become easier, but it takes time.
I think for me, that's one of the things that we've got to try and get people to see. We can raise as much awareness as we can for the plant and everything that it stands for, but, and I appreciate that we can't currently make medical claims, but we need to show people the end result. And instead of trying to tell people things, it's almost trying to develop a way to show people what's going to happen to the world if we adopt cannabis. And it's not just health, it's what's going to happen to the world and the planet. You know, the planet needs more of this plant. And how can we do that whilst we're still trying to destigmatize the plant? Because if you think about this as how did they sell Coca-Cola? How did they sell alcohol? How did they get people to actually try these products? Coca-Cola, for example, didn't break down sugar and explain what sugar was because people would realize that it's sort of bad for you. But this plant's obviously got some fantastic components to it. And once they know about these components and they know about the end result, which is optimal health, a cleaner planet, getting rid of plastics and all these things, that will start to make a better impact than the other stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm with you there. I actually think one of the biggest things that will make a change to the perception of cannabis is actually industrial hemp. I think that the growing and the uses of industrial hemp will help normalize the use of that plant as just an everyday commodity that we can use for lots of different things.
Yeah, totally. I mean, as some of you will know, there's a few car manufacturers that actually use hemp within their door cards, and they don't make people aware of that. It's a bit of a secret. So this is already being used in mainstream, and it's just, you know, it's trying to encourage these companies to actually start talking about the materials they're using more, because hemp's used in so much stuff now, but nobody knows about it. So, you know, we need more advertising, we need more sort of awareness on the streets for everything.
I'd love to maybe just ask Jason as well on this point, because of the experience that you've had, Jason, as well. How have you seen this really push on the bigger scale? I mean, if we're talking in terms of in politics, in parliaments, in the larger business and commerce sense, is it really a topic of focus for brands? Is it something that we're considering when you're selling a product, that, you know, this educational side, or is it just really get something out there that people will want to have and then come back to because of quality? What are you kind of seeing there, Jason?
It's kind of like a combination of all of those things, because each of those things reach out to a different type of consumer or buyer or patient in the market space. And so it's all about finding your audience. You know what I mean? Finding what demographic you as a company want to be advertising towards and putting those dollars towards, because each one of those different types of acts resonates with a different type of consumer base.
No, absolutely. I think that's a fair point that I wasn't thinking about right away at first as well, but I think it's something that maybe quite a few brands maybe get lost in. And it's quite a good point if we're talking about, you know, getting rid of that stigma. If you have a brand that really is, you know, approaching the older generation, maybe that is where you focus your destigmatization efforts, if we want to call it that, you know.
A lot of these different brands too, there's crossover within each
different type of certain types of products, there's crossover into some of those other different categories as well, just because, you know, like if you create a brand and like, let's just say your three main points are, you know, you want to reach out to the elderly community. And then you want to also have a focus on the educational side and then on the medical side. And so technically that product would cross over all three of those kinds of barriers and advertise basically to all three of those different people that care about that as far as a consumer class. Then you also have like the social justice aspect and things like that. So there's tons of these different types of crossovers, even within one individual brand too.
I think one of the other things that was really helpful here in Canada was, people of stature just kind of coming out and candidly admitting that they consume cannabis. I know it was a big deal for people around here when our current prime minister, when he was running, mentioned that he consumed cannabis within the last few years. Pass the joint at the table, I think, is one of the famous quotes that come from him. Former President Obama also mentioned something along the same type of lines where, consuming cannabis wasn't terrible when he was a kid, et cetera. I just don't know, and, please, everybody across the pond who's in here, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I just don't really know of any examples over there that kind of have that same weight that carries with it. I think that could also be part of the stigmatization or the kind of, I kind of want to call it the, if you're involved in cannabis, you can't really be involved in professional things. And it doesn't seem like it's really easy to blur those lines over in the EU. And so, I'm just wondering if there has been any examples like that, Liam, David, Sam, Fosanna. Has anything kind of happened like that where, the current sitting prime minister, somebody of like stature has kind of come out and been on the fore side of it?
Well, the most famous is probably Patrick Stewart from Star Trek, although he's obviously lives in, I guess, LA, California, whatever. He's British and he's a famous weed smoker. There are a few. There's like Professor Green, who's like a big, relatively famous rapper, and his name's Professor Green, which kind of gives it away. He used to, deal weed when he was younger, and then he became a famous rapper, and he does, he's very mainstream, but he talks about that relatively openly. But you're right, it's not. It the coming out element from sort of normal people to celebrities and certainly anyone in politics, it feels a long way off here from being something that is like an everyday occurrence.
Sam, you may know this, but do you know if a few years ago Boris Johnson, our Prime Minister, appointed an advocate of cannabis as a special advisor on crime and justice policy, a guy called Blair Gibbs? Do you know if that's still, if he's still active? Because that was kind of a big thing, and nothing, I don't know what came of it. There wasn't much press after the initial announcement, but that guy works for the Centre for Medicinal Cannabis in London. So we've actually got someone on alongside Boris, supposedly.
I heard of him. The only other person I could think of might be Crispin Blunt, Lord Crispin Blunt. Again, what a fantastic fucking name. His name's Crispin Blunt. But he has been sort of the most vocal advocate of medical cannabis access, obviously, for people like Charlotte Caldwell along the way. I'm not sure if he's ever... I feel like he has admitted to consuming cannabis as a younger man, but I don't think anyone would openly admit to being a current consumer.
I do know, Corey, in answer to your question, what we're seeing at the moment is it's not so much on the consumption side, very much on the involvement and business side. For the guys in the UK, probably as recently knowing, if you're talking about larger figures, somebody like David Beckham, who is being involved in certain CBD or medicinal cannabis brands, there are larger names and figures who are invested in it per se. We have the same thing in other European countries. Large executive. I'm going to say executives of large companies that do step into the cannabis industry with significant, investments. So,
Richard Branson is probably the biggest in that guys. Yeah,
there was also a company set up in the UK by two international rugby players, George Cruis and Dom Day. They've started a CBD company, actually got a lot of press. So they've been getting some good press and stuff around it. So, but what does help? It's such as Fasana, the news. The most important thing is the patients, and that needs to be at the forefront for the cannabis movement to destigmatize it. Because if people keep seeing news about cannabis saved my life, no matter how much conditioning they've had, they can't. These people have got hearts. They can't keep seeing content around cannabis saved my life, and keep holding a judgment against it. You know, the more stuff comes out, the more people are going to have to give in to themselves and just understand that this plant's here to stay now.
I'd love to actually bring in Andrew as well and welcome in Andrew Rodriguez to the stage. I know he's probably got some experience there with training and education, because he's got it in his bio on being there with bud tenders and patients. So I'd love to, Andrew, welcome in. How's it going? Give us a little bit of a breakdown on what you're doing in the industry and how you're approaching this education and destigmatization.
Thank you for having me in the space. I think this is a great time to have conversations like this. So basically, I've been in the industry in the state of Florida for 4 years. I've had an opportunity to open up dispensaries and open up locations and see how things are from the very beginning. When it comes to a new program, being pretty fresh and having to do the educations of what I call like the ABCs of cannabis to newer patients, just to give them an idea of what they are getting into and what they need. So basically helping to educate the patient to listen to their body. So I always recommend that they have a journal to journal their process and to document everything. And then that obviously translates into educating bud tenders and workers and just making sure that everything has a nice flow to it. So one of the more important things that I like to do is have, pre-morning meetings with my team, just with things that are maybe new news or just kind of refreshers on things like the endocannabinoid system and how terpenes work, little things like that help every single day, which help to translate to educating the patient and to really help to end that stigma. Because I can't tell you how many times I speak to people who haven't smoked since the 60s. And they're now open to it just because, it's becoming widely accepted because of cannabis saved my life because. So that's where I'm at in my end with training and education. And once again, I really appreciate the space. My name is Andrew and I'm done speaking.
Andrew, man, thank you so, so much. Give us a little bit of a shout where people can find you, where people get in touch with you for the people listening in later on. And then I'm going to take the role of one of those people in your morning meetings, and I'm going to ask, man, can you give us a little bit of a refresher? What's some of the main things that you're seeing right now in education for the endocannabinoid system that you could share with us?
Find me on Instagram. I actually have that linked, and LinkedIn as well. I'll be doing some more content when it comes to just education in the future. So I'd love to have anybody who would want to collaborate, just collaborate with me.
Thank you, sir. Could I just bring Stav up to the stage? Stav's a very good friend of mine, become a brother. Stav's doing some really interesting things. So, Stav, do you want to say hello, brother?
Yeah, hi, my name's Stav. I don't know if I know anyone in here. I've been in all sorts of industries in my life. I like business, and I like making products that push the boundaries. Or, something that all, a little bit different. I've currently got a vape business called VHQ in the UK. And we've now kind of by accident set up a lab, and it's called HQ Labs. And that lab has been doing some research and development into various different products. And we're very interested now in the health. If you think about it, vaping e-cigarettes is a healthier way for people to take to consume their nicotine, and naturally we're now looking into other things that people can do healthier. So we're looking at CBD, cannabis, mushrooms, everything, psychedelics, whatever we can legally look at the moment. And Dave, I don't know, what would you like me to talk about?
Well, a lot of the topic tonight's just been around the stigma of cannabis, and obviously you're from the UK, like myself. you've grown up around cannabis, and we've had a very different sort of experience with it in the UK, haven't we? Because of how the laws work over here. And I think it's just about sharing that experience. But I think the main thing is, you know, what do you see, or how do you see the future unfolding, and how do you see how can you sort of support the destigmatism of the plant with the, you know, this with how the public view it?
Yeah, I think you'll have the same problem as that vapes did. You know, in the beginning, nobody liked them, and then once the right people got behind it, and then the NHS endorsed it, all of a sudden people's sort of opinions of the stigma of vaping lifted, and people can see now, and they know it's about 95% safer than smoking. So with the cannabis industry, yeah, America seems to have a lead on the UK, but it does seem to lead the UK anyway. In many ways, we tend to follow lots of things that happen in America. So I'm hoping that we're going to follow America in some way, shape or form, although one hasn't got a crystal ball. I couldn't really definitively say. I'm not an expert in the law or, you know, how lobbying works and stuff like that. I can see cannabis becoming more relaxed and more legalized in the UK. It's just how it's going to happen. You know, will it go down the whole dispensary route, or will it be more regulated? I can see it definitely going to be, you know, decriminalized hopefully, and probably in the next few years hopefully, and I hope it does get regulated, but I hope it also keeps the market open enough for innovation and for many people to partake in it and doesn't get closed off. If there's Americans in the room, the part where Britain doesn't copy America obviously is with the guns. I didn't mean to say that. I don't want to spark any debates on it. But I'm not sure we will ever have dispensaries or not. If we do, I've got my stores ready to convert into dispensaries, Dave. You better bet.
What happens when Prince Harry comes out and says that he's been smoking cannabis since he's living in America now?
Harry, how do we see Harry, Dave?
He's a legend.
Okay, I've not been keeping up the news. Yeah, it's so hard to predict, Jason.
I was just wondering, because you guys were mentioning celebrities and other social influencers coming out on the destigmatization side. And so I was just wondering your guys' thoughts, being from the UK, if Harry was to come out and say that he started smoking cannabis since he's been living in the US, if that would be a positive or a negative for the UK due to the world's position on him right now.
I think a lot of us would see it as a positive, but and I think it would be a good thing. But a lot of people that have looked up to the royal family maybe be a bit disappointed. But Harry's always been a bit of a bad lad. You know, he's got himself in the press a lot of times. So I think he's a bit of a lovable rogue.
Yeah, and it'll be how the press portray him, won't it, Dave? So you could go either way, couldn't it? I'd hope it.
Yeah.
The first way, like, you know, well done, Harry, nice one. And then Branson, come out, come on, and let's start lobbying and put pressure on the government to just say, you're a bit out of date, really, with these laws. Let's change them. Yeah, so we're part of lobby groups as well. Don't agree with it, but that's the system we live in. So, yeah, we want to see the cannabis laws lifted and lightened, and also psychedelics, please.
Thank you, Steph. You're doing some awesome things, brother. Where can people find you if they want to connect with you?
You can follow me here now on Clubhouse. You can go into my profile at the bottom. You can follow me on Twitter. You can DM me on Twitter, even if I don't follow you. Instagram, although I tend to use Twitter more. And generally you'll find me in Clubhouse just about every day, because it's quite addictive, isn't it?
It is. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Stav. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that with us. And maybe to touch on a couple of points as well and bring in Scott here, because I know when you guys are talking about celebrities and prominent figures coming into the space, we've seen a lot of them make moves into cosmetics, because it seems to be a kind of a sweet spot in the middle where people are open to trying cannabis-based products because they're not directly consuming them and are technically looking more on, looking more on that health benefit, the natural side. Maybe it appeals to them more. And Scott's been doing a lot, I know, with Blue Mary Jane. They've been having a lot of more on the CBD and bath bomb and cosmetic side. So I'd love to get Scott's take on what you guys have got going on in the industry and how these types of products are maybe hitting the sweeter spot with consumers.
Appreciate you having me up here. What's up, Jason, everybody else? David, yeah, so I think the industry is kind of like oversaturated with, you know, tinctures and gummies. And I'm speaking more of like CBD for our products and what I focus on. But, you know, it's just when I was looking to figure out what type of product I was going to roll out under BlueMaryJane.com, it was like, you know, bath bombs just seemed like a really good opportunity because there's just so many health benefits from soaking in a bath already. So, you know, you add in some, you know, essential oils and, you know, CBD, it's just, you know, it's like an elevated bath experience. So I think the more CBD products that hit the market, they need to be like really use case, like focused on specific things. You know, like we have a facial mask now, our bath bombs. But yeah, I mean, really, I want to go back to the conversation. You guys are talking about destigmatizing cannabis and, you know, our products are great. You can use, you know, code Clubhouse for 30% off at our blog, BlueMaryJane.com, but that's my shameless plug. But talking about destigmatizing cannabis, you have to understand that there's different consumers that you speak to in different types of language, different tones of voice, different marketing materials. Everybody, you're not going to feed everybody the same information. So when you're talking about that, you have to understand that, you know, there's the traditional stoner, if you will, which, you know, people don't like that word. Then there's the 2.0 consumer. There's people who used to consume cannabis with their homies, you know, and now they have a wife and kids and they can't consume, you know, the way that they used to. So now they might only be smoking vape cartridges or doing edibles because they can't smoke fucking blunts in front of their family. So then that's the two. So there's, you know, there's that, you know, core, I guess we'll call them the community out of respect, the cannabis community or the stoner, you know, and then there's the 2.0 user. And then you have another, the baby boomers. So, you know, you have these different, like I categorize it as three different demographics. And then there's probably a million different subsidiaries of these demographics of people. So you have the, you know, the stoner, the 2.0 user and the baby boomers. And you have to speak to them in different languages and different tones of voice with your marketing materials. And I think that's really important to take into consideration. You know, when you guys are talking about stigmatizing the plant and stuff.
I couldn't agree more, man. That's a really valid and fair point. I think Sam would know a lot about that one as well when you're coming to how to approach and market in different ways. Sam, what kind of approaches have you seen at the moment that brands maybe in the UK are taking to directly educate or directly appeal to certain consumer segments?
So in terms of approach, what I've seen, what I've planned, I'm working with probably 6 or 7 different CBD brands in the UK at the moment. One of them, for example, he's very much targeting the older generation. And so we've put together a campaign for them that is based in it's near Blackpool, which has the highest concentration of over 65-year-olds anywhere in the UK. And then another CBD brand that's very focused on essentially sort of current cannabis consumers. And so that's focused in Bristol. And their branding is very different. So the one that's targeting the older generation has a very medical look and feel to their branding, whereas the CBD that's in size in Bristol is, I mean, it's kind of what I was saying earlier on, it's got a bit of an old school stoner look to it, which, so that appeals to that audience, so they're advertising there, and then, you know, to appeal to the older generation, they're doing something that looks more pharmaceutical, because that's what will resonate with an older consumer.
Well, I think I want to just kind of touch on what Scott was saying and what you had mentioned to Liam and Sam is speaking as celebrity brands, some of our celebrity brands or celebrities that we have on contract are like Gary Payton, which has one of the number one selling flowers used in California, Whoopi Goldberg, and a whole host of other different celebrities that we have on contract to produce cannabis brands for them. A lot of it comes down to the celebrity and what they actually want to market to as far as where they feel their best niche is within the market, because at the same time too they have other different sponsorship deals and other things with other different types of brands and companies, so they want to kind of choose the lane that kind of fits with their image as far as being a celebrity and who their best demographic of who they actually reach to.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point, Jason. And I would say that, you know, sometimes that there might be a celebrity or an artist or an influencer type that might, you know, appeal to a certain type of demographic. So, you know, that's why you're working with them. And then sometimes they might be restricted on what they can promote because, you know, it might be somebody who is working also with a company like Disney, but they're a cannabis consumer and then they can't, you know, publicly promote the product. So it's really tricky. It just depends. It's all case by case basis, as you know.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah, that was a very important fact because a lot of people would lose a lot of sponsorships and they can't do that. So that's one of the main things, you know, using celebrities and stuff like that. They're finding it quite difficult to find people that will put, you know, their careers maybe potentially on the line at this potential moment to be able to promote cannabis. And especially if they're not promoting medical, it can be seen, you know, there's a lot of stigma.
Saying that all use is medical use, regardless of what you're using cannabis for, because there's so many different medical benefits that one actually gets from consuming cannabis, whether they're aware of it or not, that all use is medical use, regardless for whatever they think they're using it for.
Definitely agree. But that comes down to part of the education, because we need to be able to be spreading that message. And I think that will really be helpful.
Totally agree with you, Faranza.
Hey guys, I'm loving this conversation as well. We'll take a quick moment and welcome in Rick, Reba, and Michael, and Colton. How are you guys all doing today? Welcome in. This is the Cannabis Maker Podcast, Episode 4. It's all about education, destigmatization, what we can do for the consumers, the patients, the brands, what people are doing across the pond over here in Europe. Rick, how are you doing today, sir?
It's happy Easter Day. So, you know, education to me is like, you know, we really need to educate. But I think what we really need to do is make sure that the message is, you know, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing held back. Because a lot of people in our industry talk and, you know, I don't know if it's all hearsay, but I don't. It's not a lot from researchers and all that kind of stuff. And I think there's a huge misinformation thing that's out there amongst, you know, across the board from that. And, you know, our website, we took it down about 6 months ago. It's about ready to launch again. And our main focus was as an educator, which is kind of weird for a product developer to kind of like, should be number one, should be our product, trying to sell our product. But we changed it to being an education type of piece and to make sure that people are trying to get an understanding of this industry. And I think that's what we all need right now, is to truly understand it and let the consumers understand it and stop using these terms that they have no clue what we're talking about. There's so many terms in our industry that we all understand. But we got to remember that, you know, we're always talking to people that do not or cannot even say half the words that we use to describe our industry. Just me. I'm out.
Hey, Rick, thanks so much for sharing that. Give us a quick, again, I know you've been with us before, but all for all the listeners who don't know you, give us a quick shout out of what you're doing, where people can find you.
My name's Rick Duchin, and I run a company called Soul and You, and we've gone through a bunch of different changes right now, and presumably in the future we'll only be in the water industry. So we're looking at changing all the oils that we make into a water soluble base so that the body availability of our medicine that we deliver actually gets into the person and they get more of the value out of a bottle than other ways of taking cannabis and hemp or any kind of medicine. So we created a water delivery system, and that's what we're working on a continuous basis to make that better and better. Right now it's okay, but we're trying to figure out how to be 100% organic and deliver a 100% organic product. So that's who we are. You can find me at Soul in You. If you call up or do anything, it'll all ring straight to my phone. So there's no way that I can hide from anybody. Talk to you later.
Hey, thanks, Rick. Really appreciate that. So everybody knows where to find you and knows what you're up to. I think it's a really, really interesting approach as well to go on the water-soluble side. It's been a big topic of conversation for a couple of weeks now, with people getting a bit more educated, a bit more aware of what it is, how the bioavailability increases about 50 to 100-fold compared to some regular tinctures, and how we can really start to see this used in the medical and in the recreational area. So I'd love to also bring on Colton and welcome in. How are you doing today, Colton?
Oh, man, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. It's a good Sunday. I'm out here in Oklahoma, and I'm definitely all about the destigmatization. Gosh, that's a tough word for me. I definitely I'm running an anxiety movement and really just listening to the 50,000 people I oversee every day with anxiety. They're the ones who really pushed me towards cannabis. And so I got into the cannabis industry about 4 months ago. So I'm kind of new, but learning, but we're definitely growing fast. We've got several dispensaries and farms here in southern Oklahoma.
Well, hey, welcome in, Colton. Thanks so much for being a part of it and for joining in, for making in the industry. I'd really love to just get to know a bit more when you say as well that you're overseeing so many patients and so much that you've got going on in Oklahoma. Tell us a little bit about the market there and how you guys are working towards a destigmatization. God damn it, that is a difficult word.
Definitely. Well, I mean, so I was in the military and I had bad, PTSD and anxiety when I got out. So I ended up in a homeless shelter, and that's kind of like where I just started like writing these memoirs, and then I published it into a book called The Truth About Anxiety. And so that's what got me started in the anxiety movement. I'm not a doctor or anything. I just kind of started this Facebook groups and kind of grew from there. But I guess now really my focus is I find failing farms. I find failing dispensaries. So like I didn't come from a bunch of money or nothing. So I find the failing farms. I would say I'm a pretty good marketer. And so I'm coming in and getting some of these people out of debt, giving them new fresh starts. But I would say now we've got eight outdoor farms here in Oklahoma, three indoor, and then I'm actually opening up my second dispensary here in about a week. But it's good. So my focus definitely is anxiety and cannabis. And that's pretty much it, man.
No, I really, really appreciate it, Colton. Thank you so much for sharing. For the people listening in now and later on, where can they find your book? Where can they get more info? Where can they get more on the movement?
Yeah, I mean, if you just Google anxiety hackers, pretty much all of our stuff will show up. The books, the dispensaries. If you go to AnxietyU, so that's anxiety, then the letter U.com, it pretty much has everything we got going on. And we're definitely looking to expand. I'm looking to expand my brand in every state where cannabis is legal. So I'm excited.
Absolutely. I think right now we're seeing a lot of people making a lot of big moves. And, honestly, it's good to see. It's good to hear. It's good to be educated about it. And it's nice to see that everybody is finding that little space to work in, and that we're really seeing this diversification come around. Like we had it earlier as well, like Scott was saying, like Corey said, like Jason said, this on the whole destigmatization, it really is about finding, you know, your market segment, your customer, who you're going to apply to, who you're going to try and sell to, and how you're going to approach that. So with what we've been doing with Nordic Herb Zone and working on this over in Europe, we've really been approaching more on the medical side, going together with the doctors and the pharmacists, the ones that are already supplying and working with this, that have the knowledge and education from the past 30, 40, 50 years. But, you know, they don't always have the time and the right ways to convey this to all the patients, because they're only going to have those patients that come in maybe for an hour. And then you also got to focus on the patient and their needs. So it's very, very specific. So in order to get this out to more people, you really got to break it down as well. And on the medical side, like I believe it was Rick as well, who was saying that it's so complex with the endocannabinoid system and what we have. And for people and patients to start to understand it is a whole task in itself. So I think we're also seeing a real division in this market of the people who want to learn, the people who want to find out more, and to be quite frank, the people that don't give a fuck. They, you know, they're going to be the ones that will go and buy the weed, the one that's good, and they'll go and smoke that, and that's it. That's the end of the day. But for a lot of people, and especially on the medical and the patient side, I think that's a real big focus as well.
If I can pop in, I definitely agree on that. And I, like I said, like at my dispensary, I'm glad I have good people Because like I definitely don't understand a lot of the terminology, and like, man, I get lost in the nomenclature, and I have people come in, and I almost hate when people come in whenever I'm there at the dispensary, because they'll ask, you know, hey, what's this one do? What's this one feel like? And so that's why I actually opened up a cannabis lounge out here in Marshall County, Oklahoma. So it's the first cannabis lounge. And so now I'm excited because now I can kind of go on it, you know, about the way of just like, hey, just want, you know, like where we can do like penny samples. Why don't you just try it and just try different strains and then just really figure out what works for you? Because I definitely think, you know, things work for different, you know, differently for different people. And so I'm excited to just like get different products in different people's hands and just let them try it and figure out what works for them. So I'm definitely all about that type of education because, man, I get lost in the nomenclature and I definitely couldn't explain it to anyone, that's for sure.
No, it's absolutely a complicated one. And I know we've probably all been there on one side or the other of this industry when people are asking the questions and you do want to explain to it, but at the end of the day, not everybody's a doctor, not everybody's a scientist, and a lot of what we hear is also arbitrary. You know, some people will go and read something off Leafly, and then their interpretation of that maybe a day or two later might kind of wane and go off a bit, and then we're being fed kind of alternative info, and we're being told that terpenes are actually something else rather than the aromatic compounds. Or, you know, it gets very, very, very difficult in how we're going to separate this education. And like I said, it really comes down to people as well who are interested in it and who aren't. I know that I've had people who come into Amsterdam coffee shops and they want to know about the terpene profile and the cannabinoid content. And I have to be the one that says, look, man, it's the weed that we have. It's called this. It's probably not what it's called, but you can just smoke it and enjoy it because at least this is some of the better shit that you'll find. We have to move away from this point so that we can actually, you know, over in Europe, we don't have this kind of setup with maybe some dispensaries and bud tenders that maybe have a bit of knowledge and they've been put through some training. It's not like that over in Europe, you know, and for a lot of people, the sad reality is they're still going to the corner and whatever the weed guy has is what you get. And that's it at the end of the day. So it's really, really interesting to see how we're developing on and kind of maybe bring on into the topic right now in the discussion.
No worries,
as well.
No worries. Doc, how are you doing as well? You're with us today?
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me up, and blessings to you all. I'm here to, you know, learn, share, grow, what I do and am doing right at this point is I'm an artisan crafter of frozen dessert products, gelatos, sorbets, and other frozen dessert types. And I'm trying to learn as much as I can learn about the sacred tree so that I can get familiar with what forms are available that I can incorporate into my products to create, products that are helpful. First, healthy as well, and then also still provide a pleasant culinary experience for my clients and customers.
It's definitely an interesting point to be at as well, and I got to shout out and say I really commend you for making that jump and seeing the point that you're at in your industry in the restaurant space as well, how big the potential could be for kind of starting to incorporate cannabis and a lot more of these features around in the food and beverage industry. Maybe right now for the guys up here speaking, for the guys in the audience, for the people listening on in later, for the ladies and gentlemen, give us a quick info on whereabouts you're based, what you're running. Maybe there's people out there who have exactly the info you're looking for and they want to get in touch with you. Where can they find you, Doc?
It's Arizona, and apologies in advance. I'm still working on my bio. If you want to get in touch with me, just shout out at me at doc@artisanicecreams.com. ARTISAN, icecreams, plural.com. And I'll respond to you right away.
Yeah, awesome, Doc. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate that. I know we had a couple of conversations over the past couple of weeks about how the cannabis industry and edibles and food and beverage are really starting to merge and come together. I know there's a lot of problems in the UK with novel foods. We haven't seen that many edible-based cannabis products over here in Europe unless they're in the legacy market or in that kind of
gray area where we're talking about in Amsterdam or in Barcelona, but kind of what kind of trends, really, if there's somebody here who's kind of seeing that real edible move and push, where are we seeing that go on the education side? Are we seeing that really be a kind of market segment that a lot of people are going straight towards, or how are we kind of seeing this develop?
I think from the medical side, it's just hard to dose it. And I think from the lifestyle, I mean, you know, our friends across the pond, they have loads of edibles. I'm actually quite jealous that they have that route of administration, because I think a lot of patients could really benefit from it.
In regard to the dosing, there are a couple of formats in particular for my product that I've discerned that individual servings are pretty easy to dose properly. And at the same time, you know, I'm looking at, you know, situations where we're microdosing as opposed to giving, you know, one slug of, you know, unless somebody needed something specialized, but, you know, it's still customizable. And that's what I, you know, I think that one of the attractions of doing it from a frozen dessert standpoint or frozen product standpoint is potentially appealing because of the, you know, you can still be finite and accurate with your measurements.
I just wanted to also welcome him back in again, Michael, who's in here. Michael, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Sorry, I have some family over, and it's a big Brazilian family, so everybody's all loud and talking to each other and stuff. I kind of popped into the side here so I can say hi to you guys. And you guys earlier were mentioning about, like, destigmatizing and all that stuff, and I have some really good news. So basically my family, they're all super, well, they were super anti-cannabis, anti any form of drugs whatsoever. And over the years, I've been, you know, always in their ear telling them and trying to educate them and stuff. And for the first time ever, my dad, he took a cannabis capsule that I made him, and his twin brother also took one to help them sleep. And they told them that they told me that nothing has ever worked before, and it really helped them out. And even my own mother, she's asking about CBD and all this stuff, so I'm really happy about that. And as far as the travel magazine goes, you know, I want to incorporate lots of educational material and create an international product to show people all around the world that, you know, the different types of benefits of cannabis, not only medicinally, but, you know, for industry, for the whole nine.
No, absolutely, man. Thank you so much as well. Give people a quick, for the people listening in, where they can find you, where they can hit it up. I know a 420 Travel Magazine is something that needs to be starting and make some more waves over here in Europe as well, because medical cannabis tourism, this is something that people, I feel, in every country. I know Dave has been itching to go to Spain. We've got people everywhere that are waiting to break out and go and smoke all the best weed all over the world. So give us a little bit of a shout out, what we can keep an eye out for and where we can find the 420 Travel Mag.
Absolutely. So we're getting started here in the U.S. We are working with South America also and the Caribbean. We've got some places that are on our website right now that are 420 friendly, and they are like Airbnbs. We're trying to keep it all small business based. You know, and we want to be advertising and showing off all the businesses all over the world. And we want to get also in touch with Europe and get people on board too. And we're going to be working with this company based out of Miami called 420 B&B. And they are going to be an onboarding platform, kind of like Airbnb itself. And they'll have their own rules, instead of dealing with Airbnb, which is very strict on like cannabis and all that good stuff.
Thank you so much for that. And you guys heard it as well, based in Miami, 420 B&B. I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to that as well. I've always been making that a preference when I go and travel somewhere. Last time I was driving down from Washington to California as well, I was looking in Oregon where I can stay, and that's like a 420 friendly campground and all these kind of things. You know, it's kind of like a priority as well when I'm traveling. I do that in Amsterdam to be able to see that I can go and stay somewhere where the smoking is chill. The same going to other places. You want to maybe find a more private spot that, you know, you're going to be fine smoking your bud, because you know for a fact you're not going to be not smoking when you're going on holiday, right? That's a big, big focus that we're going to see, I think, as well in the coming months when people start to travel more. So thank you really much for giving us a bit of a breakdown. I think it's a big part of destigmatization too, right? People got to travel more and welcome it more.
And it's something that I want to, you know, that I've always wanted to create. Like, I wish I had a magazine back in the day that I can, like, throw at my parents and be like, hey, like, check out these, like, professionals. Check out these, like, people that are working, kind of like Jason, you know, he works with policy, like the man knows his shit, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I wish I had, like, you know, a material, like, back in the day to, like, give them, be like, look at these amazing people, you know, their mothers, their fathers, their aunts, their uncles, you know, their religious people, non-religious people, it's people from all walks of life, and, you know, they're all here, like, for, like, one common goal, it's to, like, you know, push like nature back into like our lives that we like neglect every fucking day, you know? So yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I always found the hardest group to talk to about it was your own family, you know, like to sit down and actually, start talking to them where they don't just look at, you know, you're just a drug dealer or whatever. And they always did that. There was one, big Thanksgiving dinner we had, and I was sitting there, and my grandmother, you know, after hearing this for years, looked over at me and says, "You have any with you?" And I'm like looking at her going, you know, like my brain was going, are you asking me to roll a joint or what, you know, like what are we doing? And then my grandfather backed it up and says, yeah, you know, like why don't you roll one and we'll all smoke right now. And it was the most amazing thing. It was like all my whole family at one moment kind of finally listened to me and what I had to offer. And that was back, you know, like in the 80s. And I was just amazed that, you know, all that conversation of being a drug dealer, all, you know, every time we got together, that's what I was. So, you know, I think they're the hardest group is parents. And if you get past that, that's an awesome place. So.
And the education always starts at home. That's like the number one, like, target to, like, educate people on whatever subject it is, you know, it's always at home. And I encourage everybody to, you know, drop some knowledge on your family members.
Well, if you can get through those, you can actually go out in the world and stop talking. They're the ones that are going to be the more cynical about whatever you're doing. It's like, especially in the, you know, looking at, you know, stigma that's been attached to their lives the whole entire time. And here you have, you know, their own son, you know, growing and doing all this stuff. And, you know, I got arrested for it. So, you know, I was a drug dealer to them. And it was just an amazing thing when they all did it and our whole family there sat there and every single person got high at that dinner. And it was just an amazing time. So.
Yeah. And something I wanted to touch on also with 420 Travel Mag and our buddies down in Miami, 420 B&B, we also want to encourage people to invest in lower income communities and get them to work within real estate and to obtain property and become their own bosses. And we would be more than happy to work with these people and keep them busy if they want to become 420 friendly hosts. Yeah.
Just going to break in there, everyone. My name is Øystein. I'm the founder of Nordic Herb Zone. We are now down in Spain on the south coast, close to Marbella. And down here, we have been starting to tap into the real estate market. We have been so lucky to be working with Omni. If you go to omniestategroup.com, you will find the company that we are currently working with and have the possibility to learn a lot. I'm new to both or new to real estate, so really, really low to, yeah, it's really dope to tap into the market or what it is, learn and soak up all the knowledge I can by making content, taking pictures, flying drone, and all these things for estate standard. It's really, really fun.
Hopefully this whole pandemic thing blows over here soon, you know, with the vaccines rolling out, and we're able to meet up and everybody gets to hang out and have a good time. I can't wait for this.
So absolutely. And I think also cannabis resorts down here, for example, in Spain, things like this is also something that have to pop up in the future.
I think that's going to be one of the key ways that we really see the whole idea with stigma start to break down more because of the whole way that clubs are situated. I think Amsterdam is one of the only situations or cities where I've seen it be so open. In Spain, it's still quite private. Everything is closed off, blacked out. You can't be within public view in a cannabis social club. And I feel like really making these on, you know, when we're talking about this travel and also on the destigmatization, making these experiences in terms of cannabis clubs or resorts, like Ustam was saying, or having these kind of more collective spaces where it's open. It's kind of a open policy. As soon as you step through that fucking door, you got to light a joint, you got to hit a bong, something like that, because that's the kind of environment that is. And I feel like if you're, you know, we come into this approach where it's open and it's also family based, where, you know, you go there with your parents, you go there with them and you say, hey, let's go and take a coffee here and actually smoke a joint rather than go out for a beer or a cocktail and get fucked. Because, the you know, even with a beer or a glass of wine, what are you really doing for your body? You go and really start to take it on that destigmatization side, I think, if we're approaching it more on the experience side.
And something I'd like to do in the future with anybody that would be interested is basically creating like exclusive stays, like all over, and just doing exactly that. Just, creating a safe space for people to come out, enjoy, and learn some things, and get high.
Absolutely, keep in touch on that one and see what we can get going in Europe.
For sure, man. And 420 Travel Mag, you know, I want to make it to where it's, you know, I'm evolving like everybody, you know, like money's great, you know, everybody's got to pay bills, you know, but I really want to, what do they call it? Like the, like, employee, like quote unquote employee owned or like partner owned, like type thing where,
yeah, cooperatives.
Like, yeah. Like this is ours, you know, yeah. It's not mine, it, you know, like weed, cannabis is not mine, you know, it's all of ours, you know, and that's the mission that I want to hold on to, for all the projects that we launch.
Thank you again. And I think we're going to jump down to Terrin and give you a welcome. Can you say who you are and where you're from and what you're doing in the industry?
My name is Terrin Buxton. I'm in Oakland, California. I own an extract company, Oakland Extracts. We've been around for about 7 years. We were pretty thriving in the original medical market we had. And now with adult use, it took a little bit of time to raise money to come back in because we had new regulations that kind of put a stop to our business for a while, but we're back on the market and things are going well. And yeah, I've been in the cannabis or legal cannabis industry for about 15 years. I've been in cultivation. I've made edibles. I've done extraction, obviously, a lot of sales and different things, and a big fan of the plant. I've done a little bit of policy work. I was on the Oakland Cannabis Regulatory Commission for a little while, and I was a board member of the Cal Growers Association. But just a huge fan of the plant. Love smoking weed. Love hearing about people working on different things. Love hearing about cannabis as it's evolving around the world. I think it's really critical that this happens in other nations as well. So it's super exciting. And yeah, we definitely want to see more cannabis tourism, particularly in Europe. Went to Europe, you know, when I was in college, and it's obviously a huge place, but it was beautiful, and I'd love to go back. And particularly Spain was one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my entire life. And I'd love to take some mushrooms and go visit Gaudi's buildings and houses in this park and all that kind of great stuff. So thank you for being here, and I appreciate you all.
Hey, Terrence, thank you for that one, man. Give us a quick, just for the people listening in, the people in the audience, people up here, where can we find you? Where can they get in touch with you or find some of the amazing products you guys are working with?
Absolutely. In my bio, I have the connect to my IG account, Oakland Extracts, Instagram, and then same with Twitter, and then my personal Instagram is Hella Trees. But everything is linked through my work IG in my bio, and definitely I run all the IG for Oakland Extracts. So please reach out to me. I'm definitely down to collaborate. I love talking to people in different spaces. Obviously, for anyone in California, we're always looking for different farms and partners to work with. I'm really about collaborating with other small brands, collaborating with small farms, focusing on kind of highlighting the farmer. Because with extracts, it's like there's different technologies to extract it, but it's really all about the farmer. It's like the better the product, the better the thing going in, the better the product going out. And so we really like to highlight the farmer and interact with as many small farms as we can. And again, I love talking to folks in different parts of the world, different parts of the country about what's evolving in their cannabis scene. But yeah, you can find me at Instagram at Oakland Extracts. Thank you very much. I'm done speaking.
Hey, thank you, Taryn. I really appreciate that, man. I like the mantra, fire in, fire out. And I really want to ask you as well, seeing as you're in the industry, you got such a solid position. You've been here for more than 15 years. We're talking about destigmatization and where we're kind of seeing products, brands, travel, business, medical, recreational. Where you really see the breaking point in what you're dealing with at the moment with destigmatization? Where you really think this thing is going to just completely fall away?
Important areas for destigmatization is to focus on the medical elements of the cannabis plant. The medicinal benefits of the plant really transcend the psychoactive or the recreational or the adult use version, depending on how you want to phrase it. But and that's really the way to kind of break down barriers. I think, like with my family, my mom, she's a psychologist. I had a lot of people in my family, a lot of education. I had doctors in my family, but they're very against cannabis just because of the way it was used in the war on drugs in America. There's so many black folks being incarcerated through cannabis. They understood that it had some benefits, but to them, the risk involved with it greatly outweighed that. And my mom was against it even the entire time I was in the legal industry for many years. And it wasn't until after years of being in the cannabis industry, I had a bunch of her friends who would quietly come up to me on the side and ask me about topicals and edibles. And so I started going and giving a presentation to all of my mom's friends. It'd be like a Tupperware party where there'd be like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 older ladies all in somebody's house. And I'd bring over a bunch of edibles and topicals and focusing on non-psychoactive stuff, focusing on things that have medicinal benefit, whether it be CBD-based products or just things that were low THC, things that would help their pain, and educated them and gave them internet access to all these different studies showing how cannabis was useful for all these different ailments that they were facing. And that became such a regular thing that eventually my mom just found out I was doing this. And at first she was really upset, but then all of her friends kind of like talked her down, and that really changed her mind. And then when she started dealing with issues with bad sciatic pain, and she was in really, really bad pain, and I started applying topicals on her back. She was really against using opioids for the pain, but she had ran through all the traditional pain meds that were available to her. So then when dealing with her chronic pain with topicals and really low-dose edibles, and her seeing the benefit of that without it being a real psychoactive experience really changed her mind. And then she changed a lot of her friends' mind, and just her whole circle, it was affected by the medical idea. So I think dealing with a lot of communities from the medical angle, and then just the benefits to vets, veteran issues are an issue in every community, and there's so many good benefits. There's so many positive benefits using cannabis to treat PTSD and different issues that veterans have, that just really focusing on the medical benefits and the way we can improve society through that, I think, is the way to destigmatize cannabis. I'm sorry, I just took a fat dab, but you know, I'm done speaking. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch, Liam, too, on one, on the destigmatization is the messaging that we're always constantly using. And that's one of the main reasons that we went with the language of adult use in California when we passed our legalization bill, is because the term recreational is politically unsavory. It gives a impression that we are advertising to youth. Every park in the country is called a recreational facility. You have the Department of Parks and Recreation. And so we wanted to use the type of language that sent a clear and present message that this is for adults. And that's why we went with the messaging of adult use over the terminology of recreational.
Oh, thank you for mentioning that, Jason. I think it's a really important point as well for us over in Europe who maybe don't associate it in that way or don't have that terminology that we would interpret in that sense. It is quite, quite important to make that distinction. I know a lot of people as well, when I still see people calling it marijuana, they say medical marijuana, and I'm like, bro, fuck come on, man. Stop calling it marijuana. But it's on this similar thing where we really got to watch out with the terminology, maybe to start and focus on really destigmatizing. Because when people still associate those words with it, like you were saying as well, recreational gives that impression. It's, you know, we're definitely putting barriers in the way. We're kind of keeping it in those hurdles. I'd just love to move it on, really, and just give a quick introduction to Jordan and give him a chance to say what's up and what he's got going on in the space. And thank you for coming in, Jordan.
Thanks for having me. I think Scott bolted, but I've been out here for months. Unfortunately, I had to start a new profile, so I believe I was connected, certainly in a room with some of you beforehand. These are great topics, and I'm in Canada, so we are, you know, we're on the verge. The conversation of what cannabis can be and cannabis tourism and how cannabis tourism can help the recovery, the COVID recovery, you know, these are all real conversations that we're having. These are business discussions that I'm having every day. They're becoming more realistic. I have my first CPG products launching in beta in Canada in 26 stores in a retail location. So it's really exciting. So, you know, food stuff infused. And now to qualify that, my shelf stable food has no cannabis in it. The consumer has to buy the cannabis in the retail location, but still it's a step in the right direction. Ultimately, you know, my group's goal is full service, full blown cannabis infused foodstuff offerings, from coffees and teas to cocktails to full sit down environment. So one day we'll get there. I should introduce myself. My name is Jordan Wagman. I'm a chef and author. 6 years ago, I removed gluten, dairy, and refined sugar from my diet, and I started eating cannabis. I've always smoked joints, always, to help deal with my psoriasis since the age of 14. Every high school exam was written in the hospital. I spent a year of my life at the Dead Sea in Israel, getting psoriasis treatments, and nothing really worked. The cannabis I was smoking was just to help to deal with the effects. And then 6 years ago, my life changed. And so what I've done in the last 6 years is, you know, I've been, it's crazy, it's been 6 years in the making, but I've been writing my newest book, and it's all about clean eating and cannabis food. And so it's exciting. And I've, you know, take a lot of pride in helping to create the narrative for cannabis infused food on, you know, on a global stage. So we continue to do that. And I'm excited about the future. I'm excited about the community that we have here. So really nice to see you all. Nice to meet you all. And, you know, let's connect. And if I can ever bring some value to what you're doing, everyone, but especially you, Mr. Emery, there's probably a lot of synergy there. I might be able to bring some value to what you're doing. It doesn't necessarily mean that it costs you anything. I'm always happy to help. So whatever I can do, I'm here, and nice to see you all.
Hey, thank you, Jordan. I really, really appreciate you coming in and sharing that with us as well. It's been really quite an interesting 2 hour conversation here on the Cannabis Maker. It's been episode 4 of the series that we've got here, on really discussing the most relevant topics and what people are making in the industry, the challenges, what we're facing, differences between America, Canada, Europe, the UK now also as well, what we're seeing from all over the world. And I just really wanted to say thank you to everybody that's come in today to share their knowledge, express their opinion, their experience, their take on what they're doing. We are coming up to 2 hours on the mark here as well. And I know that if we're going to be having people listening to it on Spotify, on Google, on iTunes, 2 hours is a good one for a podcast, absolutely. So I think we're going to end the recording here as well, but we're absolutely can keep the conversation going. I just wanted to say thank you, really, for everyone that came in today to share it with us. Thank you so much for being here. And it's what makes the Cannabis Maker podcast so special, when we have so many people from all over the world sharing their experiences and really specific takes. Thank you so much, everyone.
Yeah, thank you guys for holding the space. Everyone have a great holiday today.
Yeah, thank you, everyone, for dropping by.
Thank you, folks.
Great room today. Great room.
Have a great rest of the day. Thanks.
Stay blessed, guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much for being part of episode 4 of the Cannabis Maker podcast. For everybody listening in, for everybody that's here on iTunes, Spotify, Google, you can find us every week, every day. We'll be recording a new episode with basically the latest stuff going on in the cannabis industry, the tips, the challenges, the advice, the everything basically that I'm just thinking about here. We've had topics range from medical to, let me not call it recreational anymore. That's one thing I've learned. Let's call it adult use. All the differences in the markets, everything that's going on, it's been crazy to learn about this. And we'll be having more of these discussions as the day goes on. So happy Easter to everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in. And we'll definitely be catching the Cannabis Maker podcast again. Thank you so much, guys. The Cannabis Maker podcast is hosted by Nordic Herb Zone and WeCan. Nordic Herb Zone is Norway's first cannabis and hemp brand and makes the world's best organic hemp rolling papers. Get in touch with us today to discuss wholesale and distribution options for the world's best organic hemp papers with the slowest burn and the smoothest taste. NordicHerbZone.com. WeCan is one of the UK's leading providers of digital services, development, business, and marketing tools for your cannabis business. It includes digital marketing, SEO, web design, e-commerce development, web hosting, digital marketing, branding, advertisement, wholesale and distribution, and consultancy and business development. Head to WeCan.uk today to find out more.